Hi, welcome to the Xbox World podcast. Hope you're well, and thanks for downloading us. And we're going to talk a little bit about, surprise, surprise, games today. There's only three of us today. Rob's off on a really interesting training course, so he won't be joining us today. But it's me, Tim, and I'll let the other guys introduce themselves.
We're just pointing at ourselves. Yeah, we're just pointing at one another. I'm Mike, I'm a staff writer.
I'm Matthew, I'm the other staff writer.
So, lots to talk about this week. Matt, you just got back from Frisco.
Yep.
You've been to see THQ's lineup for 2008. I don't know how much we're allowed to talk about and what we're allowed to talk about, but I think it's fair to say that some of it was all right and some of it was not quite so good.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
That's incisive commentary right there.
Why don't you talk us through some of it?
What games did I see? I saw Saints Row 2. We got to play a pre-alpha build.
That was looking a bit rough around the edges.
Yeah, well, it was pre-alpha. I think that's why. I think a lot of people walked away from that event saying it was very underwhelming, and I probably agree with that, but it was pre-alpha, and anything that you play, you know, that sort of state is to be expected. A few months down the line, when it's coming closer to launch, then I'm sure it will all be sorted out.
Had any of the guys playing Saints Row at this event played GTA 4?
No, they hadn't.
Because I think the response would have been very different if they had.
I was just about to say the same thing.
Yeah, the reason Saints Row was such a big game, I mean, make the mistake, Saints Row was a good game. But the reason it was looked even better than it actually is, in retrospect, is because it had no competition.
And also, I mean, it was the first, like, next-gen free roamer, really, wasn't it?
You throw it up into a world which is, you know, the post-GTA 4 world, and it starts to look a little silly.
I mean, every game... Sorry, Mike.
Sorry, Tim, you go on.
No, I was just going to say, every game on the format looks a little bit silly next to GTA 4.
A lot of them do, yeah, for sure. But you take a game like Mercenaries, for example, or even Just Cause... It has something a little bit different about it. You know, it can exist in that world. You can buy Mercenaries 2 and GTA 4 and get a decent experience from both, but Saints Row is so much a GTA clone.
Yeah.
Is there really space on your shelf for both? I'm not so convinced there is.
I'll tell you one other open world game that can probably exist in a post GTA 4 world, and that's another one at the event, which was Red Faction 3. For a lot of people, it was actually their game in the show. Not for me, I think... The Blob on the Wii was probably the best out of everything. But a lot of people were impressed by Red Faction 3. It felt very much... I wrote an exclusive piece for our website a couple of weeks ago now, I think. I said it was a lot like Just Cause on Mars, and I'm going to stick by that assessment. There's some real good tech behind that game, and it's looking a lot more polished than it did last month when we played it.
The worrying thing for me hearing you say Just Cause on Mars is that Just Cause was technically very impressive, but literally had nothing in the game world.
Yeah, and that's what they haven't shown us what there is to do yet. That's why I've kind of stuck with that analogy up till now, because it seems like there are these little pockets of, you know, this town here, a town there, where you can basically go in and destroy every building and maybe not quite so much in between.
Right.
Which is kind of what Just Cause was. Okay, it had trees in between, but there's nothing to do there.
Well, to me, that sounds more like Mercenaries than anything else. Mercenaries was very similar. You had a very big open world with not a lot in it. I mean, it was a great game, a really great game. One of my favorites on the Xbox, and you know I'm a big fan of Mercenaries.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, just take it for what it is. It's a game where there's a few little you know, towns and villages strung out by lots of mountains in between. Mm. And when you actually get to the towns, there's lots to do. You can take things apart, but most of the time you're just driving from point A to point B in the middle of the world.
Yeah.
The destruction in Red Faction has really blown us away. I mean, it looks real impressive. You can literally, like, you know, take out brick by brick, as I understand it, which is a lot more dramatic in terms of destruction than Battlefield Bad Company, which we've been playing online lately.
Mm.
But I don't know. I mean, it's a nice gimmick and everything, but what is it adding a great deal to the game?
Yeah, I just worry with Volition. You know, I mean, they did a really solid job with Saints Row, a really solid job, but they've got nothing in their history really that suggests to me that they are about to revolutionise the shooter in terms of the amount of damage you can be. I mean, like Mike says, Bad Company was supposed to be another stage in this, and that really that's turned out to be not the case at all.
It's not nearly as dramatic as you might think. I mean, I've been playing it for the last couple of weeks in the beta. I imagine a lot of our listeners have been as well. It was quite easy to get onto. It's in many ways a big disappointment. I mean, in a lot of ways it's really good. But it's for all of it, the innovations, you know, destructible scenery and the, you know, the way the battlefield really changes shape, and it takes the kind of frontline system from Frontlines, where, you know, you capture 2 points, or in this case destroy 2 boxes, and then the frontline moves forward, so then you've got a whole new section of the battlefield to fight on. I mean, for all the innovations, it's just such an old-fashioned game. I mean, like health packs in 2008, yeah. Really? Like, you know, yeah. It's purposely old-fashioned in that regard. They just think that's a better way to do it. But what it leads to is a bunch of guys hiding behind, hiding behind walls, shouting medic while the walls are taken apart around them. Mm. The destructible cover is great, but that really does, you know, at first you're just running around the map, just blasting everything. Like, oh man, it's just fantastic. Everything's falling apart. But if you start really paying attention to, you'll notice things are breaking in a very prescribed fashion. And you really can't change the shape of the battlefield that much. You can reduce a building down to its, you know, its supporting walls, but those walls will still always be there. Mm. Now, I've had a lot of good moments in the game. Like, I was chasing some guy in a tank. He was running alongside the fence, and I was tearing through the fence, and it's splintering, and there's wood going everywhere, and I run him over, and it's really great. And another guy ran into a house, took cover behind the wall, so I just blew away the wall. The blast killed him as well, and he's like, there's loads of great moments like that. But for all of those good moments, there's another moment where you're just struggling with the puny guns and the grenades, which do no splash damage whatsoever. Great for taking out walls, no good for taking out people. Mm. So much of the game doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah.
But it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, when they did the Halo beta, that was a demo. Make no mistake, it was a demo for the multiplayer game. When they did the Call of Duty 4 beta, that was also very much a demo for the multiplayer game. This really does feel like a beta. Mm. This feels like an early game, and they're throwing it out there, and they're like, okay, we need you guys to test it.
Yeah.
We need it tested. We need your help to make sure our servers are up to scratch, to make sure the game's balanced, which right now it isn't. It's very easy for the defenders to beat the attackers. We need your feedback on all of, you know, on the weight of the weapons, on, you know, the feedback. They really need the help of the community, and they're getting it, and they're getting a lot of it, which is a good thing. I mean, we received a lot of mail ourselves about the game, which is, you know, it's a lot of surprising amount of feedback, because we didn't ask people to mail us about Battlefield, but people were just willing to volunteer opinions about it.
So, I mean, if you're demolishing stuff down to its support beams, I mean, what can you do in Red Faction then? Is it literally everything you can demolish?
Yeah, pretty much. Any building. You can't damage the landscape, which is a bit of a shame after the first Red Faction, where it was all about tunneling through rock. But no, buildings, they're kind of built, they've got this almost wire mesh underneath, this grid of like green diamonds. And what happens if you fire on a building, basically, if you go back to that mesh, it calculates what part of the mesh has been damaged, and some bits of the mesh will be removed, other bits will turn red, say. So the bits that are removed, the corresponding chunk of the building, you know, falls down, is rubble. Those red diamonds then become damaged parts of the wall. So you'll have like bits of rebar sticking out of the concrete wall. And they've built buildings layer by layer. So you have got like rebar underneath the concrete, so you can blast away the front layer of the wall and there's more wall behind it.
The way I like to think of it is like if you were to build a house out of crackers, of Ritz crackers or something, and then went up to the wall and just started just jabbing it with a pen or something, and you're just poking bits out. That's what you can do in this game.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
You're breaking out, so, you know, the edges of the crackers will be like, you know, tatty and stuff, and they make the concrete that you're blasting away tatty at the edges, so you're always get a fairly realistic look to the damage. But in comparison, you take Bad Company. When you blast an area, a prescribed section will be removed, a section removed.
Yeah.
And Mercenaries, if you blow something up, it essentially removes the original object and replaces it with a damaged version of the object.
Yeah.
In this game, it is true kind of, you know, damage.
Which I suppose, you know, is quite impressive. I mean, when I said it earlier about Volition, I mean, I don't mean that they're not going to make a very accomplished game, and, you know, maybe technically it'll be really good. Mm. I just think that, you know, you can have a lot of really good tech with a game, but it's just that extra something that a developer brings to the party that really makes a difference. Yeah. I mean, GTA hasn't... It has got a lot of very impressive technology running in it, make no mistake. But I mean, it's not like a kind of like so far ahead of the competition in terms of what it's doing.
There's no one clever gimmick that just blows you away.
That's right.
It's just everything works so well. And that engine is incredible. I mean, the engine's an incredible technical achievement, but there's no one thing in the engine you say, oh, that's the GTA gimmick.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas with Red Faction, you've got this one thing which it does exceptionally well.
And it's just a case of whether they're going to be able to build an effective enough shooter around that, I suppose.
Yeah, and we'll see in the
next
few months.
I'm certainly not writing them off, but it's just, you know, they've got a very interesting year as a developer, yeah, because they've got Saints Row, which I fear may struggle to be seen in the very, very bright
light
of GTA.
August 26th.
Yeah, see, it's not coming too far off the back of GTA at all.
No, I think it's at a fairly optimistic release date, do you reckon, Matt, from what you saw of the alpha?
Possibly. Possibly just.
I think it would actually be better for them to release it later in the year anyway.
And August seems a strange release date anyway for a game that, you know, is one of THQ's big titles for the year. Seems a bit of a strange release to... I suppose Bioshock came out in August last year, and that didn't...
Maybe they're looking to go for that kind of Bioshock time frame where you get a game which isn't necessarily a big buzz game, and it gets the buzz because it's, you know, it's the one game everyone's talking about, it's the one game everyone's playing. And
yeah.
I mean, Christmas, it looked pretty empty a couple of months ago, but now it's filling up with a lot of good games again, so maybe they do want to beat that Christmas rush.
Yeah, I mean, I went to a meeting yesterday with the guys from Ubisoft, and a lot of what they showed us, unfortunately, I've signed away my life on, so I can't talk about it. I mean,
exciting stuff, though.
But yeah, there's some exciting stuff there, but I mean, a lot of the stuff we already knew about. But what surprised me was that... they've got an absolute ton of stuff coming out in like November, December. I said to the guys, you know, has the company not thought about just knocking a couple of games back post-Christmas, you know, like Capcom have done previous years and done very good business off the back of it?
And Ubisoft are usually masters of, say, releasing a game in March. And
that's right. It just seems crazy.
I don't know, though. I mean, so much of what they're touting for November will likely slip.
Yeah.
You know what Ubisoft are like. They will aim for a set date, say, okay, it's coming year then, but they've always got something due in March, you know? Yeah. Always have a big game, at least one big thing for the end of the financial year. So it's likely one of the games that you were in was announced to you, and maybe even some of the games which will be announced at Ubi Days later in May.
Yeah.
Good, just a very good chance that we'll see those March, February time.
One of the things I definitely can talk about, which was very interesting, was the fact that there's going to be no Splinter Cell this year.
That is a big surprise.
You know, I mean, I asked them, it wasn't part of their presentation, I asked them, well, you know, where's the cell? And they said, basically, it's gone back to the drawing board.
I mean, that's a big deal. I saw it a year ago, almost to the day, and the game looked... It like had a long way to go, but it was a great idea. The concept is fantastic. I mean, we raved about it in the magazine. It's such a great idea. It's essentially like it's Bourne Identity world. Sam Fisher is like, you know, hiding in plain sight.
On the run.
It was a really, you know, it's full of good ideas. May well be that their eyes were bigger than their belly on that one because it might be, you know, they're trying to reach themselves. It might have been that technology couldn't match what they were trying to do. Or it might have been, it just wasn't a lot of fun.
I mean, you went out to see it sort of this time last year, Mike, when you first joined the mag. And I mean, you came back and you thought it was brilliant. And then I went to see it at Ubi Days and I thought, you know, if they pull it off, it's going to be incredible. But the code they showed was so buggy and it was so
even
broken.
Back in March last year, then they were saying, due in November. If it doesn't make November, well, you know, that's big trouble for us. We're definitely going to make November. And even then, it just seemed very optimistic.
Yeah.
So I kind of expected March this year, maybe November 2008. Now, I got to say, I'll be surprised if we see it before November 2009.
Yeah, I think it's by the sounds of what the guys are saying yesterday. I mean, they couldn't talk about everything, but they certainly made it sound like it was a...
Still
a
exclusive
fair
to 360?
Well... I don't know.
I mean, Microsoft dropped a lot of money on it, so I would imagine certainly. It may well be Microsoft are asking for their money back at this point.
It may be an exclusive to 360, but I think it'll be a timed exclusive.
Mm. It's a huge game that we've been really looking forward to. And for them to take such a dramatic move, to not just say, okay, we're going to delay it, carry on working on it, to say, we've gone back to the drawing board. I don't know, that's certainly worrying.
It is a bit worrying. I mean, it's got a good team behind it, although a couple of the team you met last year, I think, have moved on to other things now.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the guys who's working on that is now working on Wet for an entirely different company. So So who knows? Who knows who's working on it right now? Ubisoft aren't talking.
No. So what have you got to tell us this week then, Mike? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, I've been playing a lot of old stuff, actually, Tim. Mm. I've been on a Metal Gear tip. I'm going to turn this into the PS3 podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I've been getting quite excited about Metal Gear Solid 4 because we've just had the guys from PSN come back, old Dan and stuff, and they've just covered their new issue's coming out soon. It covers Metal Gear Solid 4 quite extensively. Just the things they can talk about, but as far as I know, Dan's finished it and everything now. So there's been a lot of hype going around the office. A lot of people are excited about the game, and I've been infected by that hype. Now, it's made me go back to some of the old Metal Gear games. I'm having a blast with them. I don't know, but the old Twin Snakes on the GameCube was the one I started with, and it's only the second time I've ever played that game, because whenever I want to play the first Metal Gear game, I always go back to the original. It's just a better game, better music, better cutscenes, even better acting. But I don't know, I've been really enjoying playing it on the old Wii, playing the GameCube version.
Mm.
It's been nice to go back to it. I mean, it feels old now, but it's still good. Metal Gear Solid 3, on the other hand, is just fabulous. I mean, it feels, apart from the controls, which are insane, it feels modern, feels fun. It's got ran with great ideas. The best boss fights ever. I think Rob and I have gone on at great length about this on the podcast before, so I'm not going to go too deeply into it. Metal Gear 2, still not for me. But Metal Gear 4, looking forward to it. Shame it's not coming to the 360, but, you know.
I never really played Metal Gear 3, but the first Metal Gear I thought was, well, I mean, at the time it was incredible.
Just incredible, yeah.
It came out around about the same time as GoldenEye, and it was like these two kind of stealth games that are kind of were the first real kind of wave of games that dealt with stealth in a really interesting and realistic fashion, you know.
Yeah.
And I was a bit more of a GoldenEye boy because I was on the Nintendo Mag at the time. But, I mean, I went back and played the first Metal Gear kind of latterly. And it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm not a great fan of Metal Gear 2 either. I think it's too many cutscenes in it. It's too long and drawn out.
You spend so long looking at a black screen with two guys talking against it. And
I mean, Snake Eater has a lot of cutscenes.
Well, it does have a lot of cutscenes, but it doesn't have as much of the codec nonsense.
No.
And the cutscenes, you get to play for a long time before you're interrupted by a cutscene. In Metal Gear 2, you'll be in the middle of something, bang, dragged into a codec. In the middle of something else, bang, dragged into a codec. And guess what? That codec won't be interesting information. That'll be your girlfriend complaining you don't talk about her, you don't speak to her enough anymore, and you didn't get her anything nice for her birthday. Yeah. That's not entertaining. No. That's not entertaining at all. I get enough of that at home.
I think Kojima went off on one a little bit with the second one in terms of the
script. He went crazy.
Scripting.
Apparently the new one, Metal Gear Solid 4, it's the first Metal Gear game, Solid game anyway, where you can't place codec calls. They're only ever placed to you. You can't make any yourself.
Not even to save.
It's also one where the cutscenes, they are long. I mean, they're long, just this typical Metal Gear, long cutscenes, but you're also allowed to play a lot more. You're allowed in the action a lot more. So it's a game we're really looking forward to, and it's unfortunate it's a game that I'm going to have to get my old PlayStation 3 back from a friend of mine to play when it comes to June time.
Yeah, I mean, a 360 version seems pretty unlikely at this point.
If we did see it, it wouldn't be for a very long time. Mm.
The thing I always like about the Metal Gear games is how it tries to break down, the barrier of you being a player of a game like the first game, Psycho Mantis, will read your memory card, and you have to take out the controller from port 1 and stick it in port 4.
Yeah.
And when you're getting tortured, you're told to, put the rumble pad on your arm to fix
and
it.
And also when you're being tortured, that's when I always thought it was a great trick when when Revolver says to you, he says, like just totally deadpan straight in the game, he says, this is your life's on the line on this one. There's no save points this time. And he just drops in like it just as a regular piece of dialogue. And you say, that's good. It's like it acknowledges that he's a person playing the game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, breaks down, as Matt says, breaks down the wall between the player and the game.
And also where you had that Meryl's codec was on the back of the box.
Yeah, is it? Really she constantly tells you, it's like, look at the back of the CD case. Look at the back of the CD case.
CD case.
So I haven't found the CD case, but sure enough, there it is on the back of the case the game came in.
What was it in 2? Was there anything in 2?
Lots in 2. The entire game of 2 was built around that, which is why it was, and it all just fell apart. That's why the game was sort of going crazy at the end.
The best one they did was in Snake Eater, the end, you could just fast forward your internal clock a week.
Yeah.
And it'd be dead.
The end is like this pensioner, this really old guy who is a sniper. And if you're struggling to beat him, and it was like an hour-long boss fight, one of the best boss fights ever. But if you don't want to, do you want to bother with that? Just set your game clock forward 1 week, come back to the game, and you will have died of old age.
Did you ever play Shadow of Memories, a time-traveling game?
No.
It was a decent game. It's on the PS2. It was a it was almost like point and click in a way, but it dealt with going back to certain times in the past. And you started off, you got killed. So you had to go back in time. A guy called Homunculus brought you back and you had to go and stop your death. But then a few minutes later, some guy jumps out from behind a tree and stabs you. So then you have to go back in time again and stop that tree being planted so that, you know, he can't hide there. And then something else happens, you die. So you always have to, you know, preempt your death. I don't know. It'd be interesting if someone made a time traveling game where you used your internal clock. So you had to actually exit the game and like change your.
That's not a good idea, man. That's a terrible idea.
Not as its main hook, but just, you know, a couple of times. It would just be interesting because I always enjoy it when a game acknowledges the fact that it's a game. You know, when it says, oh, you know, you need to press the whatever button, not as part of a tutorial, but it's just accepting that it's something to be played through.
Yeah, I think it's quite cool. I think, yeah, I kind of agree, but I think it can go a bit far sometimes, you know.
Like Metal Gear 2 went very far.
Yeah, I mean, like, you want to be immersed in it, you know, you want to be immersed in this universe and stuff, and then if someone's saying, press start, press select.
I don't quite mean like that, but.
But yeah, I've been playing that. I've been playing The Usual Business, COD 4. But you know, it's a lax time at the moment.
It's a bit quiet at the moment, actually.
A bit quiet. We got a lot of stuff into review, but it's all stuff coming in May and June.
And also, we've had a lot of stuff into review, but it's just been awful. Some of the stuff we've had the last.
That's some
month.
Of our lowest scores.
The next issue that's going to be hitting stands will have some of our lowest scores we've ever had.
Yeah, I mean, it literally is William Shatner in the next issue.
It is William Shatner.
Yeah, it's Billy Shatner.
It's William Shats a lot.
Yeah, Sir Shats a lot.
It's I mean, anyone's going to be able to see it. Anyone who's looking for a game to buy right now is going to struggle to find something to whet their appetite. A bit of Rainbow Six, I'm sure everybody is up for. Yeah. I mean, Matt and I have been playing that.
Very buggy.
It's a great game. It's a shame Ubisoft didn't get around to finishing it.
Yeah.
It's very buggy. It needs a patch.
How about that part when we were playing it and you were saying, Matt, order your team up there. Order. I'm saying, look, I'm doing it, Mike. I'm doing it. And my team's not going. So we trundle back through the level and find one of our guys hiding in a corner behind a chair, just knelt down, shivering.
In a bush.
You can't get in there. You can't get to
it. Was impossible for us to get in there. It was impossible for him to get out. He just managed to glitch his way in there and he was stuck. It's just like this guy crouching behind a chair with his little gun peeping out. And he's waiting. He's ready to kill some fools, but you know he's there. We had to restart the game. That's a killer bug.
That sucks.
Yeah, and there's a lot of bugs like that. It was funny at the time. There's a lot of audio bugs. There's all kinds of crazy stuff in it, and that game needs a patch.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get your fun out of it if you're a Rainbow Six fan, but
if
you come back 3 months from now, I'm sure it'll be a better game than it currently is.
Yeah. I think that one of the problems with the release at the moment is everyone's trying to distance themselves from GTA, which comes out at the end of the month.
And yeah.
You can understand that. I mean, GTA, we reviewed it last month. Rob was the first person in your first journalist in Europe to finish it.
When does this hit the shelves?
The issue.
Couple weeks, yeah.
Yeah, 21st, I think, off the top of my head. So a few days before the game's out. And yeah, like I say, Rob was the first journalist in Europe to finish it.
First and only, I think.
Yeah. And only, yeah. And I think, you know, without giving too much away, we thought it was predictably magnificent, and our review will reflect that. And it's what you don't want to do with GTA, especially this one, because it is so brilliant. You don't really want to talk too much about it because you don't want to spoil. We don't want to spoil it for ourselves because none of us have played it apart from Rob either. Yeah, well, we've played it, but not to completion. Not to completion, and Matt hasn't played it at all. So
they wouldn't let me out of the office.
Yeah, so we're all very excited about it, and you know. And what we don't want to do is spoil it for anyone. But I mean, just because it is my job, I have to read, you know, Rob's review before it goes to press as part of the final checking process. And just got me really excited about playing it. I just really, really, really wanted to play it. And it just sounds brilliant. And based on what I played in the multiplayer, you know, it just seems to have just all come together in an incredible fashion. And so I think that's why, you know, I mean, like, we saw with Halo last year, you know, games that came out at the same time, it absolutely sank.
Yeah.
And one of them was Sega Project Rally.
Project Gotham, Sega Rally, both sank right
away. Sega Racing Studios closed.
Yeah, it's a real shame they did it. It was a great game they did. And
just sold no copies.
Yeah.
Because it came out at the same time as Halo. So yeah. I think people are conscious of that, which is why perhaps we've had a bit of a Shatmageddon of a reviews list.
It's been a rough time. I mean, somebody asked an interesting question on our blog, actually. they said, you know,
in fact, I've got it here.
Yeah.
A serious question. This is a guy called Rose Petal, or girl, maybe. Serious question. When you review a game, do you actually complete the thing first, or do you just have a breeze through? Well, we always complete them.
Yeah, Matt and I can talk about this, I think, more than Tim can, because most of the time Tim's checking what we review. The editor job means it's not for how often you can get your hands on the games. Certainly in our case, we always try and finish them.
Yeah.
We absolutely hammer the things to death, and you give the game as much time as it deserves. I mean, and you give it as much time as you can. Obviously, the rigors of the monthly schedule mean you're never going to see the ending of an Oblivion.
Yeah.
You might get to the end, you might see that ending, but you're not going to see everything in the game. Oblivion is a game which you could spend 200 hours on and still not see everything. I mean, that's not viable for us to finish that game. But you give it what it's due. Oblivion and GTA, they're like a wine, you know. You don't need to drink the whole bottle to know it tastes delicious.
Yeah.
One glass is enough. And in the case of GTA, it was a rare exception. Because most of the time, we insist upon playing games in the office. We insist upon playing games, you know, in our environment where we can, you know, really get to grips with them and spend as much time as we want on them. Unfortunately, and understandably, Rockstar want to keep a lid on GTA. They don't want it leaking. They don't want it all over the internet 1 month before release. They want to make sure that, you know, their game doesn't get robbed left, right, and center. So they invited us in to play it. And they invited every journalist in the world in to play it. Nobody actually got code. So everybody was in the same boat, which makes it all the more remarkable that Rob was the only one who was able to finish it.
Yeah, I think he put in like 24 hours on it.
In 3 days. It's an incredible run. I mean, realistically, you're never going to play it like that at home. You don't want to play GTA like that at home, almost. It's not the ideal way to play it. Mm. You want to take your time with it. You want to, like, you know, you want to sip that wine, you know. You don't want to gulp it. But Rob was forced to gulp it. And he did that because he wanted to do it justice in the review. He wanted to see as much of the game as possible so that he could do it justice. And that's what we always try and do with any review we do. Yeah. We see as much as possible to give it the fair review. Mm. And sometimes that means you see the whole thing. If it's COD 4, you know, you can play the game twice over before you make it.
I review Condemned 2. I finished that twice as well.
And I reviewed Halo. That was also another event where we actually had to go to it to play it. One of those rare exceptions. I think it's only happened, certainly in my time on the magazine, twice with GTA and Halo.
I mean, we make a commitment in the front of the mag. We say, you know, we only review games once we've, you know, finished them. And that's not just there for filler. We actually hold ourselves to
I think sometimes when we work in this industry and are fortunate enough to work in it, you do tend to forget that games cost a lot of money, because we are in the fortunate position that we get sent quite a few free copies of games and stuff.
Yeah. And we also get to test every game
before
we play.
And we get to test every game before
we even consider buying them.
So we're in a unique and privileged position to be able to, you know, be able to see whether a game's worth 50 quid. But when you break it down, I mean, like, the way that we look at it is that 50 quid to us, like, if we went out and had to spend 50 quid in the real world on something, it would be a we'd take a fairly detailed look at it, because if we went out and spent 50 quid on some DVDs and stuff, it would be like, wow, and have I got 50 quid to spend? Is it going to be 50 quid that's, you know, worth 50 quid? You know, I mean, 50 quid is a lot of money, you know, and we never lose sight of that, which is why we always try to complete games, because we need to see, A, whether they last long enough, B, whether they sustain either the good or the bad things that they do, you know, and I think sometimes other journos and other magazines tend to forget maybe that games do cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that. I'm going to hop on to wine just a second.
Don't go off of it for a second, because I know what you're going to bring up.
And no, I'm just going to say, I was actually, during my achievement whoring a few weeks ago, I unfortunately had to play Turning Point. I was chatting to some guy online, actually. He was one of two people I found. In 2 days of trying to have online matches, I found two people online in the world. And this guy, he had bought that game that morning. And he said to me, oh, I've just got to the Zeppelin stage. Where's that? It's like, oh, that's the last level. And he was outraged. Yeah. He went out, he paid 50 quid for this game that was dreadful. And, you know, it's not much cop on multiplayer either. And, he was just gutted.
Yeah, it's worth saying also that we shouldn't really be paying £50 for games. I mean, most of the time you can find them for £29.99 these days. With a bit of luck, £35 is the max you should be paying for a 360 game. Check on Amazon, check on Play.com. You'll find it. You'll find them cheaper most of the time. At the same time, £30 still a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
£30 is, you know, that's a good chunk of cash.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be spending £30 on a game that I'm not going to be wanting to play. Like I say, just because a game's short doesn't mean you won't play it over and over again.
No.
Call of Duty is a game you can be playing forever. It's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And GTA is a very different case, but it's the same thing. It's just that we can't see all of GTA or Oblivion when we do our review.
No.
We see as much as we can to do it the justice it deserves.
Yeah.
And that's what we'll always try to do. The thing is, the problem comes when some people define completed differently.
Yeah.
Rob finished that game. Did he complete everything in it?
No.
Of course not. He couldn't. If he had had a week, he couldn't have. So maybe we don't do every single quest in Oblivion, but do we need to? Do we really need to see every quest in it? Oblivion's one of the best games on the 360.
I mean, I think with something like GTA, you know, I mean, Rob completed something like 64 missions or something.
I think no 94 more. Missions. 94 I think missions. It clocked up at 60-something% because you've got side missions and, you know, the girlfriend things and everything.
So he played 94 of 130, I think it is, missions, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of missions. And, you know, there may be a mission somewhere in that missing 36 that he hasn't played that may be absolutely terrible.
It might stink the joint up.
Unfortunately, it means that we're in the not very nice position of probably getting it in the neck for that, for not playing it. But, you know, sometimes circumstances prevent us from doing that. But I think Rob played 94 missions. He played a lot of the side missions. He explored the world to see what the world was like. And the world is amazing. And if there's one or two stinking missions in that, then so be it.
Yeah.
You know, because that still wouldn't necessarily, that wouldn't change our view of it one iota, because that game rocks the joint.
As we said a couple of times since Rob's came back, you can, even if you're not a fan of GTA, maybe you don't like the game, maybe you don't like what it does, it makes no difference because you've got to love the way it's doing it.
Yeah.
Even if you hate the game, you have to love the way it's doing it.
Yeah.
The engine is incredible. The quality of every minute in the game is beyond anything I've seen on the 360.
Yeah, I mean, the voice acting, the scripting is brilliant.
Yeah.
You know.
Characters are just fantastic.
The way the script world changes is, if you have to replay a mission.
Yeah, unbelievable. And the world is such a rich and interesting place to explore.
Mm.
It's... You could strip all of the missions out. And we've had people saying that on our forums. You could strip every mission out of that game, and they'd still happily spend their £40 on it, and still happily spend 100 hours just monkeying around with the world. And then that's a good game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of spending money, Matt.
Yeah, we had a question actually on our forum, which I'm going to read it out. I'm not actually going to answer this directly, but it's from Really Random 13, and he wants to know, if we had £300, what games would we get and why? Well, if you have £300, there's a game coming out in May, which would eat up that £300.
One game.
Bit of DLC for that game, £300.
Yeah, it's all right.
Rock Band.
Yeah.
The price list has just been announced. If you're looking at the full set, which is one microphone, two guitars, a drum kit, and the game itself. If you lived in America, you would have to pay £116 plus a little bit of tax.
Yeah, a little bit of tax, depending on what state you're in.
Yeah, it's not even 10%. So.
And if you bought it off of Amazon.com, you'd get, I think, $20 off of that anyway. They sell it for slightly less.
So, you know, a little bit over £100.
Mm.
If you buy in this country, okay, you may be able to get a tenner off here and there, but you're looking at £240.
Which is just incredible, really.
Makes Steel Battalion look like a bargain.
Yeah.
I mean, £240 for a game.
It's shocking. At the moment, I think the package they've got, well, first of all, I don't understand why they've done this, but the pack that's £130, which has a drum kit, a guitar, and a microphone. So it hasn't even got all the instruments. You need another guitar. But that doesn't have the game. It doesn't have the game. You have to go out and buy the game separate to this package. Play.com at the moment are doing that pack for £100. And they're doing the game for a tenner off. So you can cobble it together for £140 minus one guitar.
As readers of our blog will know, Matt posted a story today, Wednesday, isn't it? Wednesday,
yeah,
the
so 8th. A couple of days ago by the time.
So a couple of days ago. And the story was an interview he did with the guys from Harmonix. And basically he said that the pricing structure here sucks.
He placed it in context that pricing of everything in Britain sucks, and sure enough, he's right.
Yeah, he is absolutely. We get stiffed constantly.
We do get stiffed constantly, but never quite so vigorously.
No. Let's look at this, actually. I've got the interview right here that I did with him. Really nice guy, top bloke, and I've got to credit him and EA. They didn't try and hide from this. The morning that it was announced, you know, they put on this show, we could go and we can ask him questions. We weren't monitored by any of the PRs. We could ask them straight questions, they'd give us straight answers. Mm. So, you know, it's really good that they actually did this.
They weren't trying to protect anyone, which happens all too often.
Yeah, that is actually very rare. So that is definitely worth a thumbs up.
But I went there, I played the game a bit, loved the game. We all loved the game. I mean, we gave the import game 89.
Yeah, we played the import a while back and we really enjoyed it. And, you know, we liked it even more, that it was a hell of a lot cheaper.
The thing is, though, GTA, we all love that game. If Rockstar turned around and released it for £100, we wouldn't be talking about the game anymore. We'd be talking about the price. And that's the case with this. The price is going to be the story with this game now, unfortunately.
Sorry, Matt, before you go on to the interview, I mean, who is going to spend £240 on a game? I mean, there may be some people. There may be people who earn more money than we earn in a lifetime who might be able to go out and spend £240. But the idea of spending £240 on a game, even if you love music, even if you really like the Guitar Hero kind of thing and you want to be able to... I'm sorry, I just can't see who's going to spend £240.
More to the point, if you are the person who's spending £240 on this game, let's not even say £240, let's call it £200. Let's say you get a bargain on it. If you're the person spending £200 on this game, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Because all it means is they'll be able to charge you whatever they please, whatever comes next.
For £200, you can get an Xbox 360 Premium and GTA 4 from Play.
Treat yourself to a PS3 and a copy of Metal Gear Solid 4 come June.
Do something.
Yeah. It'll sit very nicely alongside your Xbox 360.
And basically, at £240, it's saying it's worth five games.
Yeah.
It's not. It's a game. Yeah. It's a game with a couple of different elements.
Yeah.
So read out his quote then.
It's a huge interview. We're going to feature it.
Can I pick on one of the things he said in the interview? Because I've already read through Matt's thing. One of the things he said was quite interesting was he said, we want to give people more choice. We want to split up the components and, you know, sell the instruments separately to the game to give people more choice. But the choice they're giving is essentially you either play the game or you don't.
Yeah.
Because maybe you do, you know, buy the game separately and, you know, the instruments separately. Well, if you bundle them together, that's, you know, it's the same, but it costs you more to buy them separately. Say you want to buy the instruments separately, well, the game isn't bundled with those in America anyway. You know, the spare guitar, you don't get a game bundled with every single instrument. You just get it bundled with the main set. Mm. What's wrong with selling a main set and the game separately? So, you know, you could pick up the game and the set of drums if you want, or you can pick up, you know, the whole set, which you sell at a nice price, a fair price, a price which looks good on the shelf. £130. People would pay that. £130 would be a fair price for the game and three instruments. Maybe you've got to pick up that extra guitar, but a lot of people who are into these games will have Guitar Hero anyway, and on the 360 you can use your Guitar Hero guitar with it. But as I say, the choice here isn't a choice between, oh, you know, which parts I'm going to get. It's a choice of...
You get it or you don't. Yeah,
you get it or you don't.
I mean, the idea makes sense. We want to give people choice, so they pick up the game. They maybe only want to try the drumming things. They've got the guitar from Guitar Hero 2. Just pick up the drums. That makes sense, but that doesn't go anywhere to explain the price that they're charging. Mm. The drum kit in America costs £41 at today's exchange rate. Here, it's $79.99.
So if you think of it this way, the drum kit and the game over here costs as much as all three instruments.
Well, actually, it might be $69.99.
And the game over in America.
No, £70, £69.99.
Yeah. The absurdity of this is you could actually import this game if you're in a PS3 in this case, unfortunately, because PS3 is region-free and the 360 version isn't. If you were inclined, and you probably should be if you're in a PS3 because the game's exclusive to the 360 in Europe for at least a few months.
I know, I don't even understand that.
Nobody understands that. I mean, that's lunacy.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft's obviously just slapped down some cash in order to have it on the 360 for 3 months or something.
I mean, the suggestion they offered was what I just said, you know, just buy the drums and the game. You know, that would be great for most. Unfortunately, for the price you're paying in that, in America, you would get all four instruments in the game.
The drums are the worst bit, aren't they?
There's one advantage to the situation, though. If you're on holiday in America in the next couple of months, you can pick up yourself that. You can pick yourself the, you know, the guitar here at the Rock Band setup with an American copy of the game, because it will come in the bundle over there, for the equivalent of about £90. Stick it in your bag, take a little brisk walk through customs and exercise on your way back, because there won't be anyone there anyway. Get it home, pick up a copy of the UK Rock Band off the shelf, and you will have saved yourself £100 on that game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not worth taking a trip to America just to get it, but if you're over there, that's the cheapest way to get this game.
I'd known this when I was there last week.
And you'll have on your shelf two copies of the Rock Band game. Only one of them will run on your 360, but that will actually work out cheaper. That can't possibly be right. And I know they call it Rip-Off Britain for a reason. You know, we get screwed on everything. Xbox 360 over here costs £50 more than it does in America. PlayStation 3 costs something like £70-80 more over here than it does in America. But this is a set of peripherals which costs over £100 more.
And this is the excuse. I mean, so I asked the guy, you know, will people be put off by the huge price? To which he said he doesn't think so, which I'd argue that point. He said, you know, look at a TV or something. It's the same sort of conversion from dollars to pounds. We see ourselves in the same situation. It's a bit more of an investment than the regular game. How can it be an investment when the only way you're going to build upon it at a later date is to buy more stuff, either via DLC or more instruments? That's not an investment. That's just...
No.
You're setting yourself up to spend more.
No, the TV's a fine investment. That thing will last you a very long time. You know, a very long time. But you know what it's like with video games? No one knows what the lifespan on them is.
The other thing I worry about with this is for the punters out there, is that there's going to be a lot of confusion in the shops. You know, what do I have to get in order to play this game?
People might just pick up the instrument pack thinking that they're getting the game as well.
And you say the Guitar Hero guitar works.
It does work, yeah.
Okay.
You can cobble it together. What you need to do, if you want to get the full experience, you need the game, you need to buy the drum kit. The Guitar Hero 2 and 3 controllers will work on 360. They're one of the GH3 one won't on the PS3, but you can, if you got the 2 and 3 controllers, they go together. For the microphone, you can also use the 360 headset, which I worry about.
You can put together like this ghetto kind of Madonna setup.
That's right. Yeah.
Where one guy's got the old white controller, one guy's got the black guitar, one guy's got his Xbox Live headset on with his joypad
or
stuffed into
USB
his waistband.
Any USB mic will work as well.
Really?
Yeah.
And then you've got the guy who's had to fork out for the one guy in your group who's had to fork out for the drum kit.
Yeah.
You've got like this horrible ghetto kind of garage band setup.
But you're kind of missing out. I mean, the guitar that they've got with it, the strum bar, is much, much better. It's really thin, so you can properly get your fingers around it and rattle it up and down. It's got an effects slider bar. It's got two sets of fret buttons. It's got one high up the fretboard and another set lower down, which are much thinner. It's supposed to be for solos. But all the extra bits, the guy was saying, are basically just there to be cool. He actually said that. It's just there for you to feel stylish when you play it.
Yeah.
So you don't actually need to do that. You can just stick with your old guitars, which unfortunately had their own problems. I mean, the Guitar Hero 3 one would cut out for a lot of people.
Because it just fall apart.
The 2 one had a dodgy whammy bar. So it's just like, are you going to get the perfect version of this game? Yeah. I'm not convinced.
Yeah. And it don't want to sound like we're like sitting here a bunch of cheapskates, like, oh, look at the price on that. But when it comes to that much of a difference in price, it's not even so much that it's an expensive set. I mean, in America, people were saying, oh, that's quite expensive. I'm not sure if I'm prepared to pay that. And then right now I'm looking at forums over here and they're saying, oh, I'm definitely going to get that. That sounds great. It doesn't sound great. It sounds terrible. It sounds like we're being screwed.
Yeah.
It sounds like we're being completely screwed over. There's no justification in the exchange rate. I mean, I know exchange rates are crazy at the moment, but even if you look at the old exchange rate, whereas, you know, 1.6 to the pound. We worked out on the old exchange rate as well. And as Matt says, it's still, even there, it's still getting screwed. It's we're not sitting here saying, you know, we're cheap. We don't want to pay that much. We're saying nobody should pay that much. We shouldn't even be asked to pay that much. That's not a fair price for what they're selling.
It's all right, Mike, because for that £100, we do get a selection of British songs on it.
We do get a selection of British songs, including
Oasis
and Blur. Brilliant. Which also are coming out in America as downloadable content.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah.
I mean,
we love the game.
Yeah, we love the game.
Is brilliant.
It's a shame that the story is going to be the cost.
Yeah.
Which it is, and justifiably so. I mean, come on. That's a lot of money. Yeah. Even if you get a deal on it, even if someone manages to chop it down to 180, you're still paying over the odds.
Yeah. So, Matt, you were going to tell us about how on the airplane on the way back from San Francisco, the stewardess came round and you were watching some sort of porno movie.
I was watching Hitman. Right. I was watching the Hitman film, which is terrible, by the way. And it just happened to be this bit with some nudity in.
Is it the part where she's being whipped by the dude?
No.
Did they cut out?
No, it's after that. It's when she's trying to seduce him.
and he sticks a needle in her neck.
Yeah, actually, it might be the bit before
we're just dropping spoilers all over you right now, listeners.
Why did they give Agent 47 a love interest?
I don't know. They kind of don't know, because he never shows any interest in her throughout the entire film.
He does.
He looks at her, like, gives her sideways glances, but I mean, he stabs her in the neck. He's not interested. He's more interested in shooting people and stabbing them up with his knives.
How
crap was a knife fight in that film?
It
was like the ending of Under Siege if it were in slow motion. And, you know, being performed by Terence Badu.
Was it not
Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen.
Was it not even fun as an action movie?
No, it was dreadful.
Everything about it is a failure. Teabag's good. Teabag from Lost is good.
Yeah. Prison Break.
Yeah.
He's good.
Good accent.
Does he do a Russian accent?
He does. He does.
He's good. Strong.
I was saying to the guys this week, I watched Rambo.
Yeah.
Violent, isn't it?
God, man, like, that film is some sort of violent. It is unbelievably violent. I mean, it makes the Soldier of Fortune game look like in the Night Guard.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Strong violence. I liked it.
Yeah.
I think it's nice to see a film that's violent. Although, I know old Rambo himself, old Sylvester Stallone, was trying to make a point with the film. There are parts where you're like, yeah, Rambo's killing everybody, and that's really great. That's fist pumping action. But then there are parts where you've got these guys mutilating villages, like killing people, killing children and stuff.
Yeah, there's one particularly horrific bit where they raid the Burmese army raid the like a village full of kids and women and stuff. And there's this horrible bit where this guy slowly slides a kind of machete or sword or something into this child's chest. And like the camera doesn't cut away. It just sits there lingering on this grotesque...
Old Sly was trying to make a point, and it's the film is kind of like, I'm not sure what the film is, because it's trying to make this kind of point. It's trying to say something about, you know, the current state of the country, and apparently it's actually been adopted by people in that country.
Yeah, you were saying.
And they quote lines from the film, and, you know, it's like a rallying cry, but, you know, he's really trying to make a point about that. But at the same time, he's trying to make a film where he shoots a guy with a machine gun and the guy's head comes off. So it's kind of a little bit of both worlds. And
there was that dude from Coronation Street in it as well, who had the world's most powerful sniper rifle. Just like taking off individual limbs.
And he'd shoot a guy and the guy would go 15 feet to the left the second the bullet hit him. That's a good rifle, man.
Yeah, it was good.
That's a good gun.
But yeah, very, very, very strange. But you were saying you watched Aliens vs. Predator 2.
Yeah, I watched that on the way back. On the way there, my set went wrong. Some people had a dodgy set, so they fixed it on the plane. Unfortunately, when they fixed it, they broke mine.
No.
So I was halfway through National Treasure 2, and I didn't get to see the end of that on the way over. I watched. I had to watch The Kingdom, Hitman, and Darjeeling Limited.
I like Darjeeling Limited. You don't like Wes Anderson, do you?
No, I hate Wes Anderson. I don't hate him personally. I just
want to fight him. You're going to call him out.
I just want to fight him. Yeah, I want to fight him with knives.
It was a strong selection on the way back, though. I finished National Treasure 2. I watched Aliens vs. Predator 2. Watched No Country for Old Men. And I was getting a bit sleepy. You know, 10-hour flight. It was some stupid o'clock for me. I was like, no, I'm going to power through. So I stuck on Sweeney Todd. That woke me right up.
Yeah, nice and musical.
It was good, actually. Real strong film.
Come on, I'm not standing for that.
Lots of blood.
I'm not standing for that.
Helena Bonham Carter.
It's a musical with Johnny Depp singing.
No,
he's got a good voice, though, Matt, hasn't he?
He has. He's got a very good voice.
Yeah. Bath's own Johnny Depp.
Yeah. He's got a robust voice.
So yeah, that was my flight back. I watched a few TV episodes as well.
A few porn films as well.
It's just as old Matt was watching the boobies in Hitman, along come the stewardesses looking over his shoulder.
So yeah,
shaking their heads.
That was really
bad. They especially
bad.
Didn't like it when they spotted you with your hand down your trousers.
Retiring to the lavatory.
That's right, yeah. We probably shouldn't have done that, Matt.
Yeah, that wasn't... They didn't stand for that. Not on a nice airline like that.
No. So... Rob's off to Vegas next week to see some of the Midway stuff.
Yeah. He's going to get to face Samoa Joe and AJ Styles themselves at NWA. It's TNA Impact.
It's probably the worst person in the office to go and do a thing like that, especially with the wrestling segment of it, because you two are the wrestling experts and Rob knows nothing about it.
He knows nothing whatsoever, and he's going to disgrace himself.
Yeah.
And the magazine, no doubt.
I'm sure
he'll put on
Samoa
a grand
Joe
show.
Punches his lights out.
Well, Samoa Joe is a guy who moves around like a like a like some kind of crazy dancer, and he's the guy weighs like 300 pounds. So I don't fancy Rob's chances if it comes down to fisticuffs, to be honest. No. But, you know, Rob will do the right thing and throw the fight, I'm sure.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will. But he's also getting to see some other bits and bobs, like
Mortal Kombat,
I think.
We would presume they'll be showing Mortal Kombat. Yeah. I think that's quite likely.
They've got to show this is Vegas.
Of course. Yeah. Unreal Tournament 3 for the 360, which is...
Better than all of that is some party he goes to on the top floor penthouse of some hotel with a load of Playboy models in it.
Yeah, he's been invited to some
what a jerk.
What a friggin' jerk.
I hate that guy.
He's been invited to some party where he's just going to be partying up with the Playboy models. Not as good as the Playboy Mansion, is it, Tim?
No, Playboy Mansion is my claim to fame.
Did you get to go?
Yeah, I've been to the Playboy Mansion.
Look at Matt, he's just suddenly leaned forward.
I'm going to be an editor. That's my new ambition.
Playboy Mansion is a very strange place. It's like, I wouldn't be able to tell you where it is. You're not allowed to drive there. They have to pick you up from a car park next to UCLA, the university. And they take you up into the Hollywood Hills. And then you get to like this kind of quite densely populated area full of houses that you wouldn't call like massive houses. I mean, they're bigger than you or I would ever be able to afford, but they're not like mansions. Mm. You know, they're probably 5-bedroom houses or something. And then you go down like this little back alley that's kind of in between these two houses, and then suddenly the Playboy Mansion is right in front of you. So it's literally packed right in the middle of the kind of like this housing estate, which has surprised me because I always imagined it to be out in the kind of sticks a little bit or something, you know. But it's like this very sort of oldie worldy kind of mansion, or at least you think it is when you come in, and then you get up close and it's like Disneyland. It's all fake. It's all like a kind of like a sort of stonework, but like really recently done and stuff, you know. But it was a great experience. Yeah, it was on the back of Ubisoft's Playboy game, and there were Playboy models walking around without tops on and that sort of stuff. So it was great, yeah. I had a great old time.
He's got the biggest grin I've ever seen.
Sounds like a good day.
My missus wasn't too chuffed when I told her I was going to the Playboy Mansion, though. She was like, what are you doing there? I was like, oh, it's to do with the game. But mostly it was just to stand there like, bloody hell, look at the size of those.
Oh, God.
It was unbelievable. It was hard not to turn into a lecherous man. It really was. Because you're just standing there and it's like, for me, just a regular guy, you know. It's kind of like, I'm sure for like the Hugh Hefners of this world, it's just like, oh, it's another naked woman with gigantic boobs. But for me, it was like, there's a real woman with really big boobs walking past me really closely. Oh my God, you know.
It's lucky there aren't any women listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
It's lucky.
Well, there probably are women.
Our entire female listenership just click and done.
Sorry, ladies. I don't want you to know that I'm not normally like this, but I just, you know, it's the Playboy Mansion, you know, it's like,
It's Disneyland for boobs.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. It's like one of those things that you're really glad you got to do.
So you went over there, enjoyed Hef's hospitality.
I did, yeah.
Came back, gave his game like 50%.
That's right, yeah, basically. Yeah, but it was
that's a good trip.
Impartiality right there.
That was a good E3 that year because it was, I think they announced Gears that year as well. Got my first look at Gears.
Was that recently? I thought the Playboy game was longer ago.
3 years ago, maybe, or maybe it was 4. Yeah, but I remember they took us into a room and we looked at Gears the first time. I was just totally blown away by how good it looked.
Unreal 3 back then was
the first time that year as well.
Damn, I mean, Unreal 3 back then was probably a good 4 or 5 years ahead of anything else on the market. Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I remember them showing us Oblivion, and I was just like, bloody hell. You know, you just, because at the time we'd not had 360 consoles into the office and we'd not really...
I don't think they even existed at that point. I mean, they were just running off of PCs.
Exactly. So we were seeing these games and they just looked so far ahead of what we were getting at the moment. It was just incredible. And it's actually really exciting at those points in a sort of a console's life. You know, in a way it was really sad when the Xbox passed on.
Was killed, you know, prematurely by Microsoft.
But... as a journalist, it's almost the most exciting time because you know you're going to start seeing the next gen and you get the glimpse of the next gen, and what they show you to start with, you're just like so blown away by, because it really does look genuinely miles on. But now we just accept it as the norm.
It's the old reviewer's dilemma. You know, you get to the launch day and you got all these games coming out and there's so much a step up from what you've had before.
Yeah.
Then 6 months later, everything's an even bigger step up from that launch day. So,
no. So yeah, it was a good E3, that one. A strong E3.
Yeah.
Very strong. Should we use some questions, Matt?
Well, I don't know.
I was going to say, my favourite E3, I was going to do mine as well.
Yeah.
I think it was probably the year they showed off the DS for the first time. DS and PSP.
Right.
Lots of good stuff was shown that year. Lots of good games. It was, it was a great show, and they really everybody pushed the bet out at the press conferences. That's one of the treats when you're not in the business. It's like, staying up late at night and watching the press conferences.
Yeah.
Like now, it's our job to watch those things and go to those things. But like when you get to be there, you get to see these things unveiled. You get to see it for the first time as everybody else in the world sees it.
Yeah.
You're sitting there, you're tuned into the internet watching some dubious old stream. It's chugging a little bit, but it's okay. And you're hoping it stabilizes. It comes up, and an old that was the first year old Reggie Fils-Aimé came out for Nintendo. Yeah. He was like a breath of fresh air for Nintendo, because before every conference they'd ever done was just like, hello.
That's the one that finished off with Twilight Princess, wasn't it?
No.
Was it not?
No. Twilight Princess was like, I think probably 2 years later.
Really?
Yeah.
No, because it was first
Twilight Princess. Twilight Princess came out on the Wii. The DS came out like 2 years before that.
I didn't know Reggie had been with it so long.
Yeah, he was their marketing guy then. Then he's the president of the company.
For me, it would be first year at uni when Twilight Princess was shown off. I stayed up all that night. And it's just like, at the end of the event, it's like, oh, we've got one other thing to show you. And they roll that video. And as soon as the first frame kicked on, I was like, that's Zelda.
That's the game game we never wanted and never needed.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Wind Waker was the best thing to ever happen to Zelda. And they threw it all away in favor of a cheap-ass Ocarina of Time remake.
We'll move on. We made a promise last podcast. I want to...
We did.
The greatest story ever told in video game. And we can talk about it because it's been online.
Yeah,
I
we can.
I don't remember what that great story was.
I went up to see it at Swordfish.
50 Cent.
Oh, 50 Cent, yeah.
Blood on the sand.
Of course, yeah.
Right, the story goes, 50 Cent and G-Unit go to a fictional war-torn country to play a concert. And instead of getting paid, they're given a diamond-encrusted skull.
Yeah.
As their payment.
So far... so good.
Yeah.
So, on the way back to the plane, 50 Cent and G Unit are mugged.
Right.
Who would mug those guys? They're pretty tough guys, man.
I know. It turns out it's this evil American guy who's got a band of locals and a band of Russians and a band of French and all these other people.
That's a band of brothers.
That's an equal opportunities mercenary strike force, right?
I would say a band of brothers, Tim. So they get mugged and the skull gets taken off him. So 50's not happy, he's quite angry about this.
He's pissed.
Yeah, so, basically pissed.
So he decides to declare war.
Yeah.
So basically out comes the AK-47 and he tears up the whole city.
And it's not just the city though. It's like two countries. It's two countries.
Yeah.
He tears up two whole countries. Fiddy plus Tony Yayo, Lloyd Bank and the other dudes.
DJ Woo Kid.
DJ Woo Kid. They're taking on two entire countries.
He finds this guy who I think he works for like the American government or something. He's helping. He's given 50 this mission to do to help.
He's
out.
Shady CIA type.
He's very shady. He turns out to be like this double-crossing git. I'm sure you'll go and kill him in the end. But you work through the city. This made-up city, and then you go into the hills, the mountains. There's a bit of this is the best bit. 50 Cent himself requested driving missions.
Oh, and yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
They put driving missions in because Fiddy wanted them.
The Fiddmeister. He's delivering them.
Someone's having a lot of fun making this game.
But the thing is, Matt, is
it's
actually,
good.
It looks
good.
All right, because Swordfish are a good developer.
They're very good. They made Cold Winter a very, very good FPS.
I wouldn't say very, very good. I'd say it's all right.
A good.
Yeah.
Would you say good?
I'd say FPS. It's good, yeah. It's a good game.
And it plays a lot like the
good
club.
Good story. Warren Ellis wrote it, by the way. Or Warren Ellis, the comic book writer.
Did he?
He wrote the story to Cold Winter.
So there you have it. The greatest.
Story for 50 Cent, Blood on the Sand, is by...
It's written by
Bionic Woman.
Yeah, the producer.
The producer of it. Who's never written an episode of Bionic Woman. Indeed, has never written an episode of anything, but one episode of the series Sleeper Cell, which I can confirm to you, was an alright series.
Yeah, yeah.
But...
yeah, he's writing it. What a weird choice.
Why the hell get this dude doing it?
It's a strange choice, for sure.
It's just some producer. It's like getting, Jerry Bruckheimer to write you a script, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but...
There you go.
So anyway, what a story. That's one hell of a plot, isn't it?
Someone, like I said, man, someone's having a lot of fun making that game.
Let me just ask you a quick question. If you were, you know, if you like were in a war-torn country and you know, someone has stolen something that was yours and it was the government were involved in stuff, would you hire highly trained Marines, or would you in fact hire four hip-hop artists to take back what was yours?
Well, I don't know, man. Not many Marines have been shot up as much as for 50 Cent.
Yeah,
that guy can take a bullet.
He can, yeah.
He can take a bullet, and he's proven. So I don't know. He's got to be pretty good in the fight.
And I don't know if I put this in the preview. But you have to like combo up your kills and stuff. Again, quite like the club, so you get style points for say jumping over cover and shooting someone with a headshot. But to combo, you can also taunt. So like you hit a direction on the D-pad, it's like, you mother beeper. That's like combo insult.
That's right. Well, let me ask you guys a question. If you're in some country and you know you're some far off land, it's not your home turf. You're out there. You're doing your job basically. You're editing the magazine. You're writing for it maybe, and then your boss comes up to you and says, you know, instead of your paycheck, I'm going to give you this crystal skull. Check it out. Look, it's a crystal. It's like, you know, you can have, you know, you could get paycheck straight into your bank account. That's not the way we do things around here. We pay people in crystal skulls. Would you stand for that, do you think?
I might just go on a rampage through two countries. I might just do that.
I don't know, because like...
You're justified.
He had a concert out there, so they must have loads of, fans, and then he starts shooting them up.
That's right, yeah.
He kills all his fans.
It just shows how much he loves the money. Or rather, diamond encrusts his skull.
They just turned on him. That's the thing. He plays his gig, gets off stage, gets handed the crystal skull, boom, everyone's on top of him.
That's a brilliant adventure set in every man's war zone, I was told. The hood beyond the hood.
Whatever that means.
The hood beyond the hood.
Yeah, that's what they said.
How far beyond the hood?
I don't know. Quite far.
So let's have some questions then.
Let's have a look. What have we got?
Come on, tell me.
Take your time. True.
I'm trying to read them now.
Can't you read?
Not really.
It's lucky he works with words for a living, isn't it?
Marvellous G wants to know, where's episode 14 in the podcast? It's right here.
It's right here. It's right delivered to your ears now.
He wants to know if any of us have had their 360s die on him, because his disc tray has just stopped.
No, I haven't.
Mine probably doesn't get as much use as your two.
Mine's pretty much on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, not quite that much, but it's on a lot, and no, I've never had a problem.
But mine's all right.
Before I came to this job, I didn't. I got a launch console, but since getting this stuff, I've been through two. I'm on my third console now.
Yeah, you had real trouble with yours.
One of them red-ringed, and then the next one, the disc tray went. So
that disc tray is a little bit brittle, I must say, though. I mean, my little one often ejects that and then smashes a fist down on it.
Oh, just spills it with jam.
And I don't think it's meant for that, but considering she's not even two, she hasn't got the strongest forearms, but like she's doing damage to that disc tray.
I don't know what that disc tray is made out of. I mean, just wood and string, I think. That thing, a lot of people think the 360's got loud fans. It ain't the fans, guys. It's the disc drive.
Yeah.
If you run a game off the hard drive, the 360 is pretty much near silent. You run a game in that tray, it's like a Hoover. Mm. The thing's just like, you hear it get up to speed. Every time it needs to read the disc, it sounds like a coffee percolator or something. It's just constantly hammering the disc, you know, just hammering and hammering. It's like, my PC doesn't make that much noise.
Sounded a bit like Metal Mickey then.
Well, enjoy it. Take that with you. You could have got it on the podcast.
Or was it Tweaky?
You can play it back. Set it as your ringtone.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There you go.
Andy Silve wants to know, he wanted to know if there was any news on Splinter Cell Conviction. We've already addressed that. Hitman 5? Nothing yet.
Nothing yet, no.
We know it exists.
It's definitely coming.
We know it exists. And I would wager it's a lot further into development than anybody knows.
Yeah. It'll be out before Christmas, I reckon.
I think so too.
He also wants to know, is Infinite Undiscovery still in the works?
Yeah. We've got a little news story on it in this issue. We've got a page on it. A lot of new information. Based on, of all things, the stealth system and the smell system.
Smellsy.
Yes, this game's got a whole stealth system quite similar to Splinter Cell, so if you want, you can get around without fighting. But you got to avoid spreading smells, too. You can leave them smells as a decoy. You can leave apples or something. I don't know how it'll work, you know. It's being regarded as like a huge innovation in Japanese RPGs, but you know.
I don't know. I mean, Twilight Princess did the whole smell thing with the...
So you're saying that if you smell like Pellet did on the plane on the way back from San Francisco watching Hitman, it's going to be bad news in Infinite.
It's going to be bad news. You have to leave a few apples around the place to distract.
Okay. I'll carry a bag of apples with me next time.
Yeah.
Flying Penguin 18 asks a question that I can't answer. This is for you guys. The question, why does Matt get picked on so much like the last podcast? You said at least it's Pellet when he nearly died.
I don't remember that. Well, I said
when
that.
I had my asthma attack.
Oh, right, it's only Pellet.
It's probably this gibbon.
We pick on Rob a lot as well.
Yeah, Rob gets probably...
I'd say Rob and Matt probably get the most ribbon in the office.
It's just because Mike will go crazy if we ever try. Yeah.
It's because I'm an alpha male.
Mike has famously got an even shorter fuse than I have.
That's not true at all. It is. No, I refuse to stand for that. That's unacceptable.
I'm going to sign with Tim here.
No, that's unacceptable.
Mike has got a shorter fuse than me, and I have got a notoriously short fuse, especially when it comes to playing games. But Mike outdoes me. And in fact, Rob's right up there as well. Rob has got the most disgraceful language when he's playing
football. Rob is the loudest person in the office, no question. When he's playing games, where he's winning or losing, he's the loudest person in the office. But I am not. Like, whenever I'm cussing a game out, I've got a smile on my face.
No, you lie. It's such a lie. That is absolute crap.
No, that's true. I've seen you toss a fair few pads, Tim.
I've tossed pads. I'll admit it. I've tossed pads. But you get vicious. You get really vicious.
I'm a strong pad tosser at home, but not in the office.
What a tosser he is.
Yeah.
Hey, not in the office. I'm not in the office.
That's a roundabout way of explaining it.
That's because in the office, Matt, you always win.
Yeah, he's singing.
I didn't earlier. It might totally screw me over in a game of UEFA.
I kicked your ass.
No, I took that. Quite well, I think. Considering I scored a goal and it was pulled back for a free kick outside the box because he pulled my shirt.
Do you remember that, Matt, the last time that I tossed a pad?
Oh, was it when I won 11-1?
No, it was 5-1 and I threw the pad away and said, I'm never playing UEFA again. So and then, in fact, never have since.
Yeah, you retired from competitive gaming.
Because I'm afraid that my heart cannot take it. And I don't like it when I get angry because I get in a mood for like...
To be honest,
The filter effect from me getting angry is the next hour I'm really pissed off.
Rob says something interesting. He says, the pleasure you get from winning at those games is nowhere comparable to the misery you feel from losing. And it's true. It's like, I love winning at the football games. I love winning at the Street Fighter. When I lose, it's just...
I'll be honest though, at that point though, it got to the point where it's funny and you weren't that angry. Or at least it didn't seem like you were
I was angry, don't you worry about that.
Old Uddy's retired pretty much from the football game
as
well.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. We've gone for a spate of retirements lately. Everyone's just quitting.
Yeah, our editor, Hoodie, like Mike says, he's quite good at UEFA, but he's jacked it in as well because he doesn't like it.
I think one of the problems is that Rob and I have been on a real winning streak and we are terrible winners.
Mm.
Horrible winners. It's not that we...
Smug.
We're not smug. We're
two of the smuggest men you'll ever...
It's not that. We appreciate... You know,
smugness.
We appreciate quality play. Didn't see any quality play coming from you guys. So.
How did you appreciate it when our old designer and I, we took you on? And I think it was 4-0 in one game. And so it was a rematch. And Rob said, come on, Mike, this is the biggest game of your life. Don't let
this
it go.
This is another thing Rob does, actually. No. It should be worth it. I should interrupt you because that's something Rob does. If you're like playing a game, you're like, oh, God, I just really want to do well in this
Careful.
Game. Rob will be behind you going,
careful.
It's a big game. It's a big game. Yeah. This is like we were playing Top Spin 3. This is a game we'll be talking about probably in the next podcast. We've been playing a lot in the office lately. It's a game we're really enjoying. But Rob and I have been playing one another an awful lot. And every time it comes to any like crucial point in the game, not even a crucial point, it can be the first serve of the last set, and he'll sit there and he'll go, it's a big point this. He'll be right up in your ear and he'll get real close to you and go, it's a real big point this, Mike. It's a real big point, don't mess it up. And you'll just be, and like you can be the most confident man in the world, and as soon as he stands behind you and starts talking like that, he'll be behind you and you'll knock a point out and you'll go, ooh! And your heart will leap out your chest because that guy didn't keep the volume down.
No, he didn't keep the
volume. It was great because he was saying this, and then 9 minutes in, we were 3-0 up.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was just giggle central.
And for the rest of the game, we completely shat on you. But sure enough, you did deserve the victory.
Yeah.
It was a deserved win. But I don't know, we've won as many as we've lost. We've had some good games. Just a shame everyone's sort of dropping out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the reason... Honestly, I think the reason Matt gets more stick than anyone is because he's so freaking good at games. He just sits there with a smug look on his face.
Oh, I don't mean to.
He wins so much. It's like, we've got to give it back to him somehow.
I just won't. I'm not playing Matt any games ever. Right, moving on.
I've already said when Street Fighter 4 comes out and we get a copy in the office,
he's not playing
I'm not playing him because he'll ruin the game for me.
One from Bizarro Bike.
Hmm. Oh, Bizarro Bike.
What do you think of Bizarro Bike when we're not getting to
that again? Done that before.
He said, what do you make of all the recent comments that PS3 and 360 could be the last of the traditional consoles and future games will be streamed straight to our TVs?
That was some analyst, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it?
He's talking some full lies.
Some analyst who always comes
out. It was,
out.
In this case, some analyst who did spewing the usual analysis. Or, you know, it's the same old line. The analysts tend to be right 50% of the time.
Yeah.
You know, when they go for their safe bets, like GTA is going to sell a million copies, like, oh yeah, okay, but probably will.
What paycheck did you collect for that?
Yeah, you know, when it's something like this, I don't know. This generation, I don't think so. Next generation, possibly.
Yeah, I think games will be coming down, but it won't go straight to our TVs. There will always be a Microsoft console and a Sony console.
Well, I think when some professional analyst starts talking about this, it's like you can take it or leave it. When someone like Dennis Dyack, you know, a guy who's been in the industry for a long time, sits there and says, like, the only way the industry's sustainable is with one machine, you know, yeah, whether it be a PC, whether it be a derivative of the PC which sits underneath your television. Like, you know, whether it's any of these different ideas, it has to be one box.
Yeah.
It just has to be. There has to be a unified thing. And much like DVD, what you need, in order to make sure the technology keeps moving forward, you need a group of, like, you know, premier developers who decide on what the spec's going to be. You have a group of guys, basically a board, which decide what the spec will be. They come to an agreement, and for the next 5-6 years, however long it is, that's your spec. And everybody develops for that spec. And maybe the box is essentially a PC in a box, like Matt said, the old Phantom thing, which never became anything. You have this box that sits under your TV that's your console. And it does everything you want. It streams your films, and it streams your music, and it streams your games. And it has a disk slot just in case you want to play games that way. But it can also download games. It's got a nice big hard drive for that as well. And you have this box which, you know, Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo, everybody agrees upon it. You know, they say this is the stat we're going to work to. And that's great, because, I mean, it's great for the consumer as long as, you know, the technology moves forward regularly and you have this board to make sure that every 6-7 years you decide, okay, the technology's moved on and so this box needs to move on. As long as you keep on moving forward, then it's great. If it were, you know, at the same time, there's a danger it could kill competition. I don't know. I really do agree, though, that the only way the business becomes sustainable is that we have one box. I mean, who wants a Wii, PlayStation 3, and an Xbox 360 sitting under their television? Why can't I play Metal Gear Solid 4 and Super Mario Galaxy all on the same box? Mm. That'd be great. I mean, it'd be so much more convenient. A lot of people who will be listening to this podcast will be, like, you know, real big-time gamers, hardcore gamers, and they will have more than one box under the TV, and they'll maybe like the advantages that having different boxes brings. Like, would we ever really see any innovation like the Wii if we didn't have separate machines? I'm not sure that we would. But at the same time, god damn, it'd be a lot more convenient.
Yeah.
And a lot easier on developers too. No porting, just one machine. Mm. I don't know. It's we will definitely see another console generation after this. And I dare say we'll see one after that. I think that might be the last one by that point, though. We'll start seeing people getting whittled out of the market.
Yeah.
Couple more?
Yeah, maybe do one more.
Flying Penguin 18 again. He wants to know if we're going to do any video reviews and put them on our website. Well, I mean, I'm in charge of the disc that you get with your Mac. I'm just getting a new piece of kit, so hopefully
we'll be able to do a bit more of that. Yeah,
Your plan, certainly for the DVD,
it's not something we haven't wanted to do. And we're continually looking for ways to, you know, approach stuff like that a bit better. Unfortunately, Matt's been slightly scuppered by the rubbish kit he's been given to do the disc with. And I'm allowed to say it on this podcast because no one from our computer services will be listening to it, so I can say what I want.
But they've sorted me out with a good
piece of kit now. But they've finally got you a good piece of kit. Which
I can't use because it hasn't got any software.
Because it hasn't got any software in it, which is good, so...
But yeah, it's
back to the start, basically.
Well, we'll look forward to getting that.
Yeah.
It's something we're looking at.
So anyway, to cut a long story short, Matt's looking into it, and we will probably do it at some stage.
Yeah, we'll see about websites, certainly for the disc.
More, I mean, the website is something where, you know, we may look into, but definitely for the disc, yeah. One more then?
Another one from Really Random 13. more of just a general point, really, about the age ratings. Obviously, the Byron report came out.
Yeah.
A lot of talk about age ratings. It's worth probably just having a mention about
it. I personally
that.
Think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think rating games like films, it will finally mean that people can't go around saying...
The Byron report was a really, really nice surprise, yeah. I think, for all of us, because it was very fair, generally speaking. It was very even-handed, and it was... It didn't demonize games in the least. The media did the very day it came out, but the Byron report itself was actually quite fair. I mean, it doesn't recommend in any way banning violent games. It just recommends a standardized rating system. I mean, at the moment we have the BBFC, we have PGI, we have all these different boards all over the place, offering different certificates. You have a box which might have three or four different logos on there. Mm. It's very hard to understand. We need a standardized system. Everybody understands the BBFC system, for example, works fine for movies.
As long as and she, does,
she also advocates. Yeah, she also advocates bringing in a the 12 certificate for video games as well. Yeah.
Well, there have been 12 certificates in the past. Hexic.
Yeah.
Not Hexic. First person shooter on the Sega Saturn. Quite a fancy one.
Jesus Christ, man. seriously now, Jesus Christ. That is some obscure reference you're pulling up.
The problem is with games at the moment is that the ones that submit to the BBFC are submitted off their own back. Basically, the publishers submit and by choice, not by because they're regulated. And as we understand it,
they submit as video, not as a game. Yeah. It's not as if, like, you know, you talk about our problems with reviewing games earlier on in the thing. It's like, we have to give it as much time as possible. Imagine taking a non-gamer from the BBFC who has to sit down and play his way through every single moment of GTA. So instead, what happens is Rockstar will pick the most objectionable, shall we say, moments from the game and see what the BBFC make of it.
I think it's good. I think it's about time it happened, because then you can get idiots like Keith Vaz off the agenda.
It can't possibly hurt games.
No.
The only person it hurts are people who are, under 18 who would like to play GTA.
Yeah.
But for the industry as a whole, it'll be fine. And those guys who aren't quite 18 yet, well, they'll be 18 in a few years and they'll be just fine. They'll get over it then. In the meantime, it protects games against reactionary nutcases.
Yeah.
And, well, more importantly, it protects young
people
against the games.
Yeah, it works for it. It works in every regard, like Matt says. But, I mean, at the same time, we need... shops to enforce them, and more importantly, parents to enforce them as well.
I was in game the other week, and this little boy went up to the counter with his grandma, and like she had, I don't think it was Dark Sector, but it was certainly an 18 game, similar sort of thing. And the guy's like, "Oh, this isn't suitable for him," and she just came out. It's like, "Oh yeah, it's for his dad," which it blatantly wasn't. Well, maybe it was. I don't know. Maybe I'm just jumping to conclusions. But for the fact that. She got the games, they turned around, and then she gave them to the little boy straight away, and I don't know, I don't understand why people are so
You wouldn't hand the kid a porno movie, you wouldn't hand the kid a copy of Rambo, you wouldn't do it, you wouldn't give him a copy of Cannibal Holocaust and say, be on your way. And just as you wouldn't hand the kid a copy of Manhunt 2, these are games which have got an 18 rating on the box for a reason. It's not, we're not saying nobody can play them. We're just saying it shouldn't be in the hands of people of a certain age. But I mean, at the same time, God, I mean, all of us, I'm sure, are guilty of watching 18-rated movies when we were kids.
No, I never did.
Nah, of course not, Tim. No. You're a little angel.
We played 18-rated games.
Again, everybody did. But I think even then, it's like, you sort of understand that ratings are there for a reason.
I think also, a few years ago, 18 rated games, if there were 18 rated games, they were pretty rare. And
like Duke Nukem 3D is today's standard.
Yeah, and also I don't think they were. I mean, now you are seeing games that really are pushing the boundaries in terms of within the context of gaming, within the film world and stuff. It's not 18 rated games aren't necessarily doing anything that an 18 rated film doesn't do. But a few years ago, games were being rated 18, like you say, like Duke Nukem, which had a bit of rubbish bit in a porn cinema, which wasn't
that. Was why Duke Nukem got the 18, because of the strippers and the bit in the old porno theater.
So it's an interesting discussion. I think it's definitely going the right way.
But one thing it won't do is, I don't know if this is why so many people want games to be rated 18, but you see every now and then a killing occurs and a game's blamed for that. There seems to be this obsession in the mainstream media that giving games rating and stopping kids playing violent games will stop them killing people.
Well, I think there's someone of someone very well qualified to speak on the issue, Stephen King, wrote a piece in an American magazine just this week about that very thing, about, you know, this guy who shot up a college campus whose name escapes me right now was accused, turns out, wrongly of being a big fan of Counter-Strike. It wasn't the case at all, but you know, that was the story. That became the story. And as King rightly points out, the story shouldn't be whether he was shooting people in a video game. It was, how the hell did he get his hands on a semi-automatic machine pistol, and how was he able to walk around a college campus blasting people with this gun? Mm. How did that gun ever find its way into his hand? And you know, that's the question. Yeah.
Unfortunately, in America, that's the elephant in the room. Really, no one wants to talk about. And we don't want to get into it here because this is a bit more of a. But that is unfortunately the thing that no one wants to talk about over there is why are these kids getting guns in their hands, you know, and this, it's a convenient scapegoat game. So I mean, we always know that, but particularly in the States, it's a convenient scapegoat because these college campus shootings just keep on rolling in every 6 months, every year.
And which college student? What college student doesn't have a few games on his shelf? You know,
yeah, absolutely.
It's always an easy target. It's an easy whipping boy. And I know, if we're hoping the Binary Report would go some way to, like, you know, allaying that. Mm. And sure enough, the day it came out, every newspaper in the country was saying the report suggests, you know, strong restrictions on violent games. Didn't just suggest anything of the sort.
No. Right. Well, that's the Xbox World Podcast for another couple of weeks. Thanks for listening.
On a serious note.
Yeah, we hope you enjoyed it. Our many and varied discussions about many and varied things, and we do let us know what you think of it. Post on the forum or post a comment on when we upload the podcast to the blog, and we'll see you next time.
Yep. Bye bye.